Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Thank you for joining the Empowerment Zone. I am your host, Ramona Houston. With all that is going on in our nation and in our world, we need people on the ground, in the boardroom, in organizations, working to make a social impact and working to make changes in our society that can make sure that everyone has access to equal rights and equal justice. And today, we're talking about Martin Luther King today. A lot of times when we look at how we develop strategies in order to create social change, we look at some of our icons who were very effective in their movements and in their leadership for social change. And today we're going to discuss the letter from the Birmingham jail. And we have Mr. Robert Jackson as our guest today. Robert Jackson is a seasoned philanthropic executive whose leadership and experience has enabled mission-oriented agencies to raise more than $80 million to serve greater humanity. As Senior Director of Development of the Martin Luther King Center for Nonviolent Social Change, he is responsible for the overall philanthropic strategy to ensure the principles and philosophies of Dr. King and nonviolence permeate in our society. He has had the distinct honor to serve as Senior Director of the Development of the Emory Law for more than 5 years, where one of his major accomplishments was to secure funding for the John Lewis Chair in Civil Rights and Social Justice. He also serves as he has also served as Director of Development at Spelman College and was a vital component to the completion of Spelman's $150 million campaign. He is originally from Milpitas, California. Correct. And he's a member of the Association of Fundraising Professionals and the Council for the Advancement and Support of Education. He is a fellow alum as a graduate of Clark Atlanta University, which I didn't know. Yeah. And he's also a graduate of Emory University with a Master's of Law. He is married and enjoys traveling and sports, and he's a big fan of the Golden State Warriors. Welcome, Robert. It's great to have you.
So happy to be here this morning and to really chat and philosophize, not just about the letter from the Birmingham jail, but all the hate and divisiveness and tension and conflict that's currently being seeped into our communities and societies, and just banding together to promote love and compassion. And, you know, hopefully we can find a path forward.
Yes, I'm really happy that we're having this conversation, especially when you look at, like you said, what's going on in today's world with all making hate almost welcome in our society. Like we've had some leaders who have just promoted hate and divisiveness. Yeah. And what we need is love, you know, and light. And right. So I'm so happy that you're here to discuss some solutions so that we can give our audience some hope and give them some conviction in order to make change. Robert and I actually met at the Martin Luther King Center for Nonviolent Social Change fundraiser, a gala during MLK week. And now anybody that knows me, I go to bed really, really early. And we stayed up all night in the lobby just talking and philosophizing. So I really took a liking to him as soon as I met him. And I'm thrilled that we're having this conversation today. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll proceed into your topic this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's just all about being a servant and any way that I can help and help those most vulnerable in our community. And sort of my philanthropic trajectory really started at Clark Atlanta University, being sort of a suburban kid from the Bay Area, and you know, not understanding why the AUC, why the community around it is distressed, right? It's supposed to be the Black intellect and inspiration and all that, but literally walk into class, you kind of see people on drugs, right? And so I just wanted to serve, right? And so from there, I worked at a homeless shelter for a while and did some good stuff at the Atlanta Mission, manager of volunteer services, and you know, realize though, for me, and you know, according to my skill sets, for me to be an effective ambassador, right, for social change and those that are hurting and struggling in our community and in society, it's understanding philanthropy, development, connecting like minds and hearts towards mission-oriented organizations, so we can really come together, band together, and formulate a strategy to really, again, kind of counteract, right, you know, some of this atrocious behavior, right, that we're seeing from individuals, that we're seeing from select organizations at times, the atrocious behavior of leaders, right, and really kind of band together to promote love and compassion and a sense of community and well-being, and so we can live in peace and harmony. And it sounds hokey, right, but you know, that really is part of the Constitution, right? Pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. And so making sure that that's a reality for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's no shortage of opportunity, right, to roll up your sleeves and join the fight, you know, with everything that's currently taking place. So just an honor to serve and, you know, hopefully be part of that solution.
That's great. So tell us about your work in fundraising and throughout your trajectory. I see you moved from education to the nonprofit world in terms of the King Center. What has been your trajectory in fundraising, and what has really been your personal and professional mission in fundraising?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it was just about an accumulation of skill sets and experience. Right. And so initially, kind of, as I alluded to, I started out working in a homeless shelter, you know, over the next kind of 4 or 5 years, I quickly understood that, you know, for many instances, you know, 80% of an organization's revenue is going to come from 20% of your donors. Right. Mm-hmm. So not saying forget about, you know, people that are giving, you know, $5, $10, $25. We need all of that. Right. But it's the ability to engage high net worth individuals that financially, at least, they can make an impact, right? And so understood I needed to attract that skill set. And the best way to develop and refine that skill set is in higher education. The linkage interest and ability, the systematic approach that higher education brings to philanthropy and fundraising, you know, is unfortunately, it's unrivaled, right, in many nonprofit organizations. So I really wanted to be fluent, be a student of that. And so, you know, sort of did that a decade, 5 at Spelman, 5 at Emory Law. And so my overall personal mission, vision, and impact has always been to take that experience in higher education, the refined way that you approach it, not just from an individual standpoint, but organizationally, and apply those same principles to nonprofits. It's no secret that many nonprofits struggle to hit their budget every year, right? And you know, there's deficit fundraising, right? And all of that. And so if I can put in sort of the spigot so they can have sustained engagement and philanthropy, so they can adequately have the resources to their mission to help those most vulnerable, you know, hopefully I can be a conduit of that.
Sounds great. So I know you wanted to talk about the letter from the Birmingham jail. I'm curious, why did you choose that particular topic as a fundraiser and activist? I'm curious.
Well, one, I work at the King Center, right? So I think that sort of makes sense there. Additionally, it's you know, combining sort of the heart, love, and compassion, mm-hmm. you know, that Dr. King exuded throughout his whole life, but the understanding of that you have to apply it, right? And there's strategies to it. And it's more than just a profession of love and compassion. that you gotta be an advocate of some of the work that's taking place. So it's one, having the heart and mind and love and compassion to want change. And then the next step is, okay, what is the systematic work that needs to be done? And so for me, this letter in many instances exemplifies that.
Yeah, it was indeed a pleasure to go back and review that document. I read it when I was in undergraduate school for one of my courses, and I believe also in graduate school too. But what is it that really appeals to you that you think from the letter that you think can be very helpful to our audience and people who are really who really want to be involved in social change and who are currently activists?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll go ahead and read like just a few things.
Yes, please.
Moreover, I'm cognizant of the interrelatedness of all communities and states.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot sit idly by in Atlanta and not be concerned about what happens in Birmingham. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality tied in the single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly infects all indirectly. Never again can we afford to live with the narrow, traditional, outside agitator idea. Anyone who lives inside the United States can never be considered an outsider anywhere within its bounds, right? And I think, you know,
we can't hear you for some reason.
One of the reasons that the particular passage sticks out with me is because it's the understanding that if there's a certain select of a community that is vulnerable, right, it affects everybody, right? And so, for instance, you can kind of break that down into one's own family hierarchy, right? And so if you're a mother and a father and you got three kids, right, if one of your kids is sick, right, then the whole ecosystem of the family is off, right? And so if we see our national community as a family and in a group, a select group of individuals are sick or hurting and vulnerable, then the whole balance is off. And so at times we don't realize that. And so Dr. King was really able to exude that and eloquently share that, in certain passages, select sentences from the letter from the Birmingham Jail.
Yeah. And when you look at that statement that you read, just to put it in context for our audience,
sure.
Martin Luther King was answering some critiques about his activism, about why should he come as an outside agitator to work in Birmingham and be involved in movements for social justice. And he was answering that to say, hey, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. I have to be concerned as a moral person, as a citizen, about my fellow brethren, and so should you. So that he was answering that critique of his work.
And we've seen, some light at the end of the tunnel, particularly with all the protests that took place over the summer. It's no secret, right? There was a grave injustice, right? An assassination that the whole world saw, mm-hmm. right? And so, one of our brothers was hurting, and so those demonstrations over, 2-3 months, right, was an example of us coming together, and that injustice was a threat everywhere, right, in global demonstrations, right. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it currently now with the attacks here in Atlanta, with the killings within the Asian community, right, mm-hmm. and so that injustice, right, is a threat to justice everywhere, and so. The ideas and philosophies and what Dr. King stood for is still on some level, on many levels, being applied today. But, obviously, we're still aware that the dream hasn't been realized and there's so much work.
Exactly. Is there any other passages that you would like to share your interpretation on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other part of it is when you hear sort of the word and begin to kind of seep in, the word nonviolent, right? It at least on its onset has a passive connotation, mm-hmm. but it's not, it's very active, right? And so
Yeah, he talks about his philosophy in there about what nonviolence is. Please read that, because that's one of the things that really intrigued me again reading it recently.
Nonviolent direct action seeks to create a crisis and foster such a tension that a community which is constantly refused to negotiate is forced to confront the issue. It seeks to dramatize the issue that it can no longer be ignored. My citing the creation of tension as part of the work of the nonviolent resistor may sound rather shocking, but I must confess that I'm not afraid of the word tension. I've earnestly opposed violent tension, but there's a type of constructive nonviolent tension which is necessary for growth, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you look at, when you compare this, and at the King Center, we're beginning to really raise our profile and visibility and offering, you know, our nonviolent strategies within either select communities or in the corporate setting, right? And so you've got a lot of these companies that are, for the first time, are putting in their first diversity and inclusion strategy. And so on the onset, when we offer some of our nonviolence training, you know, they don't understand it, right? They just kind of go out and think it's, you know, singing hymns or what have you. and you think on the onset, a company will say, you know, we're nonviolent, right? But when you begin to kind of lift the hood of the car, we're not just talking about violence in terms of physical acts, right? There's verbal acts, right? There's racism and discrimination. There's gender inequity, right? There's you know, lack of promotion for you know, communities of color within a corporate setting. And so all of those are, while micro or could be macro because it's affecting your livelihood, right? Those could be perceived as violent acts, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And so our principles and philosophies, Dr. King's philosophies of using nonviolence is a way to confront that. And what we're seeing right now is that tension has been created now. Right. And they're forced to have dialogue in terms of how they go about really creating a diverse, inclusive environment. Right. And so for us, it's really raising our profile and visibility that we're the leader in this. And by focusing on his principles and philosophies, it is a viable solution, right? Mm-hmm. And through nonviolent means, we can create this tension where we can have this dialogue from both sides and then move forward together.
Yes, and Martin Luther King talked about, he doesn't run from creating tension, right? Absolutely. Tension is good because it creates, as you stated, an environment where you can have these conversations and you can move toward correcting many injustices. One of the things you stated about microaggressions being can be perceived as violent acts. That's very different kind of perspective of microaggressions, but I would agree with you because it affects our total person, right? And it's not violence in terms of physical, like you said, it's emotional, it's mental, it's psychological. Right. And many of the types of experiences that we're having in the professional workplace are microaggressions, and they do have an effect on our lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so once we begin to kind of look at that in a holistic manner, mm-hmm. We'll begin to open some eyes. And I will say, right, you know, there's some companies and organizations that are taking a significant strides in the right direction. I mean, I think for us now, and this has happened 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, right? There's been improvements, right? But then after those improvements over 5, 10, you know, 15, even 20 years, right? They slowly roll it back, mm-hmm. right? And so we just have to be cognizant of that and continue to move forward until the dream is realized for all.
Yep. With progress, there's always backlash.
Absolutely.
And we have to be careful to make sure we don't go too far backwards as we step forward. Yep. In our efforts. So are there any other passages you would like to discuss?
Yeah, we'll do one more.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. So I think this last one, I think it brings into context as we live under a society that is controlled and administered by the demands of law, right? You know, I think for all of us, the origins of one's spiritual journey, right? We should be governed by the mm-hmm. laws of the universe, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so, mm-hmm. Towards the end of his letter, he states, "We should never forget that everything Adolf Hitler did in Germany was legal."
Yep.
"And everything that the Hungarian freedom fighters did in Hungary was illegal." Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. "It was illegal to aid and comfort a Jew in Hitler's Germany." Mm-hmm. "Even so, I'm sure that had I lived in Germany at that time, I would have aided and comforted my Jewish brothers. Mm-hmm. If today I lived in a communist country where certain principles dear to the Christian faith are suppressed, I would openly advocate disobeying the country's anti-religious laws," right? Mm-hmm. And so this is on a very minor level, right? You know, when we look at some of the voting rights taking place, how silly is the law where you can't give someone food and water while they're standing in line to fight you? Mm-hmm. Someone really took the time mm-hmm. to compose that law. And so we've got to get to a point where we intellectually think about some of our laws and how they're restrictive to certain communities. And then be spirit-led in terms of our heart and compassion and what's best for everybody, right? And so Dr. King was eloquent in his engagement in terms of pointing that out. And so we have to be too. When you just talked about the aforementioned example, they're talking about literally giving, you know, someone 8 years for that act of giving food and water in terms of voting rights. And then there was another lady, you know, I think I'm probably mistaken too, that went and knocked on the senator's door in
yes.
Georgia.
Yes.
Right. And
yes.
I think that's the one that's getting 8 years literally. Like, so, I mean, so it's just figuring out, you know, the laws of man in conjunction with laws of the universe and being comfortable when your heart, love, and compassion contradicts that, right? Mm-hmm. And being okay to advocate for that.
And thank you for using that passage. There are so many passages you can read from the letter. Even though it's a short letter, it's a very impactful letter.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think looking at what's happening today, that was a good passage to read because there is a difference between man's law and universal laws, as you stated, the laws of the universe.
Absolutely.
Or moral laws. Some laws are immoral, and we as a people have to be able to stand by our convictions and point out and do what is necessary to create that positive tension in order to bring about change. It was legal at one point in time to own slaves, right?
Right.
It was
fee-free of a person, right? You know?
All of those laws, Jim Crow yeah. laws were legal. Yeah. Slave codes were legal.
Yeah.
You know, the taking away the right to for interracial marriages. All
right.
of those were legal at some point in time. And it was illegal for people of color to be in certain areas during certain times of day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so many different laws that had to be challenged in order to bring us to the place we are today. But there are many, many more laws that need to be challenged today to bring us where we need to be today and tomorrow. So thank you so much for sharing the letter from the Birmingham jail with us today. In your final thoughts, what would you like to leave our audience with in terms of call to action on what we need to do, either, you know, just in terms of our work in social change movements or what we need to do to support the King Center, what we
yeah.
need to do to support other causes that really make our nation, communities, nation and world better places for all?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, you know, lead with your heart, lead with love,
mm-hmm.
Lead with compassion, and that will dictate all of your actions. We aspire to that. We are that at the King Center. Visit our website, thekingcenter.org. Take the Be Love Pledge, all the aforementioned principles that we just talked about in terms of standing against racial injustice is something that we advocate for. And we've got thousands of individuals that have taken the pledge and it's gaining great momentum. Secondly, join the fight to combat hate and divisiveness, right? And so there's staunch advocacy work that can be done, particularly now within the new voting rights bill in Georgia, and the continued advocacy work in terms of stopping hate, particularly against our Asian American brothers. And so we're really focused on that right now. And then finally, search within your heart and financially contribute to the King Center, right? Whether it's, you know, $50 or a pledge of $5,000 over a period of 5 years or something as including the King Center in your legacy plans through a planned gift, ensuring that we have the financial resources so we can have the programs and initiatives and the advocacy arm to be a viable solution to directly counteract what's taking place. We need the support of the community to do so. And so we welcome that.
Thank you so much, Robert. If anybody wants to get in contact with you, how would they do so?
Yeah, so you can email me directly at rjackson@thekingcenter.org, or you can call me directly at 678-216-5698.
Thank you so much, Robert. Thank you for being a guest on the Empowerment Zone. It's great to have you, and you're always welcome back. And please do give Dr. Bernice my love.
Will do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Bye now.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support. And of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.